Preparing to delve in 3, 2, 1.
Hello, everyone. On this episode, we continue our interview with Mike Myler talking about Myths of Akuma Trade War. And Mike basically breaks down the entire campaign for us. It's a very detailed conversation. And I learned so much, and I hope you do too. Enjoy. Trade War is an adventure path for characters at 3rd to 12th level. So are you assuming that, like, they start as 3rd level characters and they're 12th level characters by the time you're at the end of the adventure path?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So this is a long campaign.
Oh, yeah. This is going to take... Oh, golly. If you're playing with a group that knows their characters and are experienced role players and aren't trying to dilly-dally, maybe you could finish it inside of 9 months to a year.
Okay.
Inside a day, gosh.
A really long day.
Yeah. And it depends on how good they are, right? Because, like, Fangs of Revenge is a mystery, and I had one group that played through it in, I think, all of maybe 2.5 sessions, and the group I am playing through it now is on session 4 or 5. So, you know, it depends on the group, right? If they're really good at solving mysteries, they'll cut through 2 of these pretty quick.
Okay, excellent. All right, so basically the next 9 months of my life are trying to defeat...
The next 9 months of your life are dedicated to Tanuki.
Well, okay, so let's go over the adventures, right? So,
okay.
Scourger of Bushido Temple is the first one. And you're... Oh, Bengoshi. I should talk about Bengoshi. So once the Mists of Akuma show up, right, the government's like, oh my god, like, this is gonna collapse. So what they do is they pick out special individuals who are able to deputize adventurers. They're called Bengoshi, so they're essentially Johnsons from Shadowrun, but for the government. So they hire up the party and they say, hey, you're gonna go do this for me, and I'll pay you a bunch of gold, and if you decide not to, I will declare you're a fugitive, so go do it. And the first thing the PCs are hired to do is to deal with this, like, temple that's suddenly having a bunch of problems. Like, the town of Shibai has traditionally been protected from the Mists of Akuma. No one's really sure how, but, like, there's never been sightings of the Mists of Akuma there, and then the Mists of Akuma start showing up. So you go and you find out what's going on, and, like, the Yurei Fu Wind Chimes, whenever you see one of those, like, lines over a letter in the names and stuff from Mists of Akuma, you're supposed to hold out the consonant or the vowel, and I always forget to do that.
Oh, okay.
The Yurei Fu Wind Chimes are gone, and you have to try to recover them. And if you do, you can put it back in the temple and save everybody, and it's all well and good. And then you hit the first connection. During that first fight, or first adventure, there are these two dudes who are hired by the town to deal with the Mists of Akuma and Adeta Oni, like, overrunning them. They're called the Mubo Brothers. And they're basically two big, fat, stupid, drunk guys with, like, hand-sized cannons, or person-sized cannons, I should say.
Ooh.
And there's no way to finish the adventure without killing them, basically, because they take an ire against the party, because, like, how dare these adventurers show up? Who cares who sent you? We're the Mubo Brothers. This is our business. So you have to kill Raiden Ningu and Sanda Mubo. And then in connection one, one of the Mubo Brothers hears that this party has killed two of his brethren, so he sets up a trap, this one being Kyu Chi the Wise. So he sets up this, like, Winter Valley trap where he, like, closes down one area, so you have to do a dead run towards him, and he's, like, up in a sniper's nest with a super long rifle. And throughout each of the connections, you fight more Mubo Brothers. There's a total of 6 of them. And, like, every time you think you're good, like, suddenly this bastard tricks you into a warehouse and lights it on fire. Or what's the other one? Oh, the other guy gets a bunch of pirates together to come deal with you. And then the last one is just, like, this super badass, and you have a fight with him in the treetops, and then he tries to escape on top of a train. That's one part of the connections. And the other thing that keeps showing up in the connections are nature demons. So in Shibai, the thing that kind of gets unleashed by the wind chimes being removed is this wind demon, and you have to kill it. And then in the first connection, there's a winter spider, you might call it, named Kumo Rui. And you have to destroy that, and you get, like, some foreshadowing about the Black Tory Gate. And then after that one, there's Shitai Tabaru, the Corpse Eater. So you have to fight him in the summer. And if you don't get him before he eats too many corpses, bad things happen. And who's after Shitai Tabaru? Oh yeah, Madpoor and Tan. So there's a I'm getting ahead of myself. So connection A, you fight Kyuchi and you fight Kumarui. And then you start to hear about these like farmer peasants getting the superpower armor. And you get some rumors, but you don't actually see one. Then the second adventure is, why am I blanking? Oh, Feud Primordial. So you get wrapped up into this feud between two imperial siblings. The imperial siblings are the mythological figures that first created Soberin. Like, all the prefectures belonged at one point to one or another imperial sibling. In Feud Primordial, and I really don't want to ruin it. One of the imperial siblings is supposed to get something stolen, and you unknowingly are hired to recover it. That's how that rolls out, and you first get to meet the imperial siblings. And one of those imperial siblings is the guy responsible for stealing all this Yurigotira armor and installing it on peasants. Also get to meet your first peasants in the after Feud Primordial, and that takes you down to like the southern prefectures and a river city called Nasudo. And it's the first mystery that you really get into. There's a mystery element to the first adventure, but it's not like a it's more of a dungeon delving kind of deal for the first adventure, and the second one's more mystery focused.
Okay. All right.
So the connection after that one is where you deal with Shidai Tabaru, the corpse eater, and Taurus Sudo, the guy who tricks you into the warehouse he lights on fire. And you first start like interacting. You actually get to meet one of the meet might be a strong word. You get to see some of the peasants wearing Erikotira armor and interfere with a fight between them and actual Shikome warriors that want to get their shit back.
Okay.
That takes you north into Seimon, which is... did you see the awesome map for Seimon?
Yeah.
That is one of the best things I've ever found in that is public domain.
Wow.
Right? Do you want to guess what that is?
No, I'm not going to know.
El Paso, Texas, circa 1886.
No.
Yeah. It's amazing.
It's awesome.
You get to Seimon, and you're hired to basically break a union because Seimon is in Heikasuru, and they're starting to build this like railroad to try to like better supply everyone, make a profit, protect from the Misfukuma and stuff like that. And the workers are starting to like unite and providing a problem, and you're hired to go break the union. And you find out, as you can see by the pictures on the other side of that page, you begin to find out that the Fangs are more than just a union. I'm not going to say any more about that one because it's a really good mystery.
They're a pottery club.
Yes, they are a pottery club. That you got it in one. You got it in one. After that one, that's when you go on the water adventure. So you you take a boat all the way around the western coast of Soberin, and there's a way to speed it up with a really cool, creepy sequence. You run into this like crazy old man dancing on the water, and he tries, I don't want to give too much away. And you have to deal with him. And then also the Mubo brother who gets like, I think three gangs of pirates to try to come after you. Then once you get back to the mainland, Cursed Soul of Scorpion Samurai starts. That one is really cool and super insetting. It's about this guy who was an orphan. And he gets taken in by the nobles who run Fusan Prefecture. But he falls in love with his stepsister. And then once the like Lord Gabaru Fusan finds out, he's like furious. And he stripped this guy of his title because he was like a really famous samurai. And he disowns his daughter. And then like the two of them try to flee. She gets killed as they're like escaping from the castle.
Yeah.
And then 10 years later, everybody who was at the ceremony where... Kinjuku is stripped of his title and everything, just starts to die. Like the guy who was taking notes, the servants bringing food and drink, the court, you know, musicians, they all just suddenly start getting killed out of nowhere. So they gather the last three servants who haven't been killed yet, and they put them on an island, and they set this trap for the Scorpion Samurai. But once the players go to, like, you know, trigger the trap and, like, get them, they find out that they are actually themselves trapped by it. And that's... We're slightly more than halfway through. It's really involved. Like it's an adventure map. Yeah.
Well, you know what you need? You need to like talk to HBO and have them do like a Game of Thrones style like series and just do like 10 episodes for like 8 years straight in order to explain it. That's what you...
That would be amazing. So let me see. What happens after this Scorpion Samurai? That's the short connection after that one. Yeah, so this next one has there's just a really quick one, because the next adventure is called The Eye Sovereign of Storms, and it involves going to an Oni city called Tsukisasu, and the only thing about it is it's on a mountain, and you have to do magical shit to get there. So it was really easy to place where the players need to be geographically, so the connection is really short. It's just like, get them to a mountain. Get them anywhere near a mountain, and then the adventure starts. But there is an opportunity to find out about the Black Gates during that connection, and you find out that there are two more nature demons that are based on wood and metal.
Okay.
You don't get to interact with them yet. That happens after the Ice Sovereign. Mm-hmm. The Ice Sovereign Storm is really simple. Once you get to the Oni City, you have to lay siege to the castle at the top of it and destroy magic circles in time to destroy the like upstart demon that has sort of taken over. And then you need to decide the fate of the city, so you can either put it into the hands of three individuals, and that all has a larger effect.
Okay.
And then finally, you get to fight the last of the Mubo brothers in the last connection, and find out a little bit more about the Black Gates and figure out that they're related to the Pale Master. You don't know who the Pale Master is yet at that point.
It's Mario in a Tanuki suit.
It's terrifying.
Then Revenge of the Pale Master happens, which is a really awesome adventure that I did not write. Somebody else wrote, the guy who got me to D&D. After that, then it's on to the Hone no Roi Keep ascends and all the going through the fortress while the battle's going on and all that stuff.
Just a brief stroll through the setting.
Just a brief recap of what the heck is going on.
Just some stuff.
It was like a year and a half in game, and probably at least a year of real life gaming once a week.
You know what, folks? You're gonna get your money's worth. There's tons of content here. There's so much content.
And that's just the first adventure. There's a whole another one that I want to make.
What? Can you tell me a little bit about what that's hopefully going to be?
I can, definitely. Okay. So when I ran the first Kickstarter, there was somebody who gave a mind-boggling amount of money. I don't want to say because it's an embarrassing amount of money. And I was like, okay, hey, are you sure that you want to do this? And you didn't make a typo? And like, I messaged him immediately. I want to make sure, like, hey, because you're not going to just bounce out, because that'll make Kickstarter not fun because you gave so much money. Right. And he stuck around. He just really liked the setting. So I've been running this game for him and his friends called The Imperial Matchmaker, because he's like, oh, I want this like this thing that has to do with a lot of intrigue and stuff. And the premise is that about 400 years ago, there was something called Battle of Broken Spears between the Gekido, the Kirai, the Haikasuru, and what is the last one? Namida. And it's a pretty big fight. And a ton of people get slaughtered. But nobody's willing to admit that they lost, right? And they're still fighting them. Like, it's been 400 years, and they're still complaining to each other, like, oh, I beat the Namida, blah, blah, blah. So to, like, quiet this down and try to unite everybody, Emperor Itoshi just decides that, like, he's going to pick out a bunch of them, I think a total of 20 grooms and brides from the different clans, and force them to marry, and that will solve this forever. And that's what the Imperial Matchmaker is about. He sets up all these weddings over the course of a month, and it's all the drama and intrigue and like abductions and assassination attempts and everything that goes with that, because very few people actually want those marriages to go off okay. Although I will say at least two of the couples do genuinely love one another. For the most part, they either want to escape or kill their betrothed or otherwise disrupt the marriage.
Okay.
And that all happens inside of Sanbaoshi. So this, if you want to go and like travel across Soberin, that's what Trade War's for. And if you're just like interested in a really engaging adventure, that's what Imperial Matchmaker is about, because it all happens in the main capital. There's some side quests that can take you elsewhere, but for the most part, it's all in Sanbaoshi. So you can just take regular characters and play through Trade War, no problem.
Sure.
If you try to do that with Imperial Matchmaker, it's going to be very difficult, because it's built to be a little bit harder and for characters to be a little more powerful. So to that end, there are eight iconic characters that run the gamut from like, here's an awesome samurai, to here's a cool priestess, to here's our knockoff of Sun Wukong, the Monkey King, and here's an Irokotira warrior, and this crazy Tengu seer from the future. They're all really dope. There's a free PDF you can download with like previews of them. And each of them has a special extra thing. So like Kanden, the Nekroji ninja, is haunted by these spirits that about 75% of the time try to lead him into danger to get him killed, or rather destroyed. But 25% of the time are actually trying to help him. So like you'll occasionally get like a ghostly guy helping you out. Rinna gets like whenever she comes into contact with very specific items, she gets divinations about the future. Tomo, the samurai, her steam arm is a Tsukumogami. So like she put it on and got it installed, and then found out it was one of those things that it has animated, but like now it's like attached to her body. So I love that guy.
Oh, okay.
Then Ryuna. Yeah. And so the iconics are for Imperial Matchmaker, because it is like fifth edition plus. It's gonna be extra hard. If your group is looking for something that's, if you haven't been challenged, if you've been playing through like, you know, what is it? The Lost Mines of Phandelver, and then the Rise of Tiamat, and what's the one? The Storm King's Thunder. You're finding those to be lacking in challenge, just play through Imperial Matchmaker as written, and you'll be weeping. But So yeah, I've already playtested a lot of Imperial Matchmaker, and more than half of it is written. And by the time that anybody finishes Trade War, Imperial Matchmaker should be done. So.
I am looking at a picture of Matsi Tsunamu.
Oh yeah, the private eye.
Yeah, I'm guessing that's a panda, right?
It's a tanuki.
It's a tanuki. Okay, it looks very panda-like. I guess you know there is a resemblance between them, and with like a sword, like a samurai, it's like everything I ever wanted Pandarans to actually be. And
she has a gambling addiction, and her thing is magic dice. So like you can roll the dice, and depending on how it rolls, it might create an illusion that helps you and hinders an enemy, or hinders you and your allies and helps an enemy, or it might not be an illusion at all.
Wow. Okay.
That's a fun one.
That's fun.
And all those are illustrated by Claudio Posis, who does work for D&D and the mainline and Star Wars and Lord of the Rings, and is just unbelievably talented.
All over the place. All over the place. If you've heard of it, he's probably worked on it.
Yeah. He gets around, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I am also seeing a small picture of Imperial Matchmaker, or the cover of it. That's a fun cover. I really like that.
That was by Renan Moraes, who is another Brazilian artist.
It makes me feel like matchmaking is just a really deadly sport. And you never want to be in it.
When you're being matched with, you know, assassins and stuff.
Right. But see, when I think of matchmaking, I think of like Jane Austen novels. and this is definitely not a Jane Austen. this is like Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. I don't know how well Jane Austen would actually do as an RPG. I think that would be a tough one.
It would be tough to do with D&D 5th edition. I could see that working with like a fudge or a, you know, a fate kind of deal, right? Or maybe Powered by the Apocalypse.
Yeah, I mean, if it was more like a story-driven kind of system. Yeah. I mean, we've had somebody on the show that made a game out of basically an Oscar Wilde play.
Yes.
So I know that that's a thing you could do. But if you were actually doing it as like a role-playing game, anything like that, or the Genesis system, or Cypher, maybe.
No, we're gonna play it and by the author of Lady Moon Numer's Fame.
Or you could just do that and just say it's like it's when Oscar Wilde just met Jane Austen for 5 seconds, and they just made up a whole thing about it. You were the one that originally came up with the concept for Mists of Akuma, correct? Mm-hmm.
Yes,
okay.
Sir.
What was the real driving influence for you? Coming up with the setting.
In Varanthia, we have an Eastern fantasy setting, because Varanthia itself is like six settings contained into one world, which is a whole nother podcast. But so I had a lot to do around Eastern fantasy, but something about it just wasn't clicking for me. And I really love like victories that are Pyrrhic, right? Like the heroes won, but their mom dies, or something, you know, just like you win, but you don't win. Like, I feel those are more memorable and valuable role-playing experiences that stick with you longer. So I wanted to make a setting that was reflective of that, but, like, that's just, like, inappropriate from Urethiel, because Urethiel is about Wuxia, and Wuxia does not include that. Right?
I see.
Except for maybe the middle arc, but that's another conversation. So, that's why. And then once I got the setting out, the writing the adventures was the one, the cursed soul of the Scorpion Samurai, right?
Yeah.
That was from writing stuff down in the outline to sending in the file to the printer was like 1 week, because it just poured right the fuck out of me, because it's just trapped in there. So I don't know. I think it really appeals to the darker, more disturbed parts of my psyche, which are pretty prevalent. I don't want to.
They're the ones that keep writing all these books.
Scare future employers or anything, but like, yeah, it's real easy for me to write for Mr. Fukuma. Like, real easy.
Maybe that's not something you bring up like on first impression. I've got
depends
these
on the job
stories.
I'm interviewing for, you know.
That's true. That's
this
true.
Is why I would be the best person for teaching your kindergarten class. It's not the kind of.
No, that's right.
I feel like I want to watch this job interview now.
Now, in terms of the artwork, you were the primary artist?
No. I can't art. I can do graphic art, and I make all the maps.
Okay, so the layout and graphic art, that's what I'm thinking of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do all the layout and graphic art. Yes. And I, like I said, I pull a lot from Ukiyo-e, so anyone who is familiar, like Kiniyoshi and Kino Hagai show up a lot. And then I hired out Claudio Posis when I'm able to. So he does the iconics, and he did the cover for Mist of Akuma. And then on the interior, I used Indy Martin, who is amazing. Jacob Blackman, who's also great. Nathaniel Batchelor and Sarah Shijo.
Oh, wow.
And then I hired up Renan to do the cover for Imperial Matchmaker, and I'll probably get him for another thing. And then I'm hiring a new girl named Hope something or another to provide some accents to go throughout Imperial Matchmaker.
Okay. And then some of the things, like you were showing me the map, those were all public domain pieces?
The same one was a public domain piece. All the other maps are stuff that I make.
Oh, okay. Excellent. Yeah. Now, Seimon is still just blowing my mind.
I know, right? I couldn't believe it. I couldn't. I found that, and I was like, no fucking way. This has to be copyrighted. And I looked everywhere, and it was not. And I was like, yes!
I feel like at that point, it would be public records, yeah.
And there's another isometric map in there, too. There's two. There's one that covers, like, the Tizuki Rail House. That's from Japan. That was not from El Paso.
Oh, wow.
Right? Like,
that's very nice.
It's ridiculous.
Now, some of these are beautifully done. It feels like they had to have, like, the modern airbrushing technology that we have for doing technical design in order to make these.
Well, you figure all the advances that came with the Gutenberg printing press over 300 years,
mm-hmm.
that same amount of effort and evolution and refinement happened, but for a different kind of printing press that just wasn't good at changing type. So they'd make like one plate, and that's why it was typically images, because, like, you know, you can't just change the words around.
Right, absolutely. And the picture is worth 1,000 words. That's what they tell me.
Yeah, that's
what they
say. The levels of intricacy and stuff in Ukiyo is just phenomenal. And I've made a whole product line around it. It's really good. You know?
Yeah,
there you go. Must be good. There exists things that you can buy about it.
Mm-hmm. And everyone's seen the Kurigawa wave, you know?
Yeah, I did see that. It looks like there's a little dude surfing on it, too.
That's Matt Parentin!
Yeah, Nathan, get with it.
I'm sorry, I don't know every character. But he looks like he's having fun.
Oh, and the map, that's all that matters. The boats after that, the boat map was actually by Rick Hershey. That's one that I bought stock rights for.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I didn't make the boat.
Yeah, I don't fault you for that. It looks like a hard boat to make.
I mean, I looked at it. I was like, I could spend $4 buying the stock rights for this, or I can spend like 3 hours making my own boat. It's just
it just doesn't seem to add up.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
And if you go two pages past that, there's a carp, like a carp man, which is Ukiyo-e.
Yes.
Like,
oh,
it's
koi.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like our traditions suck ass compared to Japan. Like, we got,
that's because we came,
we got,
that's because our traditions are all English.
Yeah, Hieronymus Bosch, and that's like it. That's it. It just like ends there, and then we go to Japan. Like, here's a carp guy, here's some tanuki with like house sized balls, Here's a giant, like, it's insane how much more awesome Japanese artwork is.
Want to talk a little bit about the actual Kickstarter?
Well, right now I'm waiting for the print proof of Trade War to come in, because I want to be able to show off, like, hey, look, I have the book. It's here. It's ready. It's already, like, one of these books is already done, so people who pledge to the Kickstarter will get their stuff within, I think, 2 weeks of the Kickstarter ending, because I had to wait for Amazon to, like, confirm payments and all that kind of jazz. I tried to make it cheap and available to people, so, like, the lowest level pledges is for $15, and that will get you either $15 for Imperial Matchmaker PDF or $18 for PDF of Trade War, which is,
okay,
I think, an awesome deal.
Yeah.
It's a great deal.
For 9 to 12 months of my life, that's not bad.
I try to make it worthwhile for everybody. And there's a primer for Soberin. So, like, to introduce your players to it, there's a quick, I think, like, 40 pages that gives, like, a basic rundown and, like, some snippets. Like, here's the rules for a samurai. And when we designed, I knew for a fact, like, they're definitely going to release some kind of official samurai for D&D 5e. But it's almost certainly going to be a fighter. So yeah. Our samurai is a paladin, and our wugen is a warlock, and so, like, you should be able to use that with all the stuff that you'll find in Mists of Akuma should be easily compatible with the existing Eastern fantasy options presented by Wizards of the Coast.
When you say wugen, all I can think is the Weeaboo Book of Fight Magic or whatever it was.
No, wugen are like they're manipulators of arcane nature magic, and specifically in Mists of Akuma, there are people who have made deals with the entities that have consumed the seasons. Right. Mm-hmm. So there isn't a winter anymore. There's a thing that ate winter, and that's what's making stuff cold in the winter, or when it should be cold. And that's who you ally yourself with if you're a Wujin. And like, you can choose to, like, okay, why I'm all about Fuyu no Yaban, and so that's my patron. Or you can just have the seasons be your patron. So when fall changes to winter, your patron changes. So a little more exciting for warlocks. So I feel kind of get shafted on player options a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so in the Trade War itself, stats wise, there's 50 maps in the book and over 100 NPCs and monsters. So even if you're like, I don't know how much of this adventure I'm going to use, it's a map and monster book for 18.
Yeah, it's a huge reference guide, regardless of whether you use the adventure path or not.
Right. And Trade War and Imperial Matchmaker are good for Shadow of the Demon Lord, but only. The Iconics are only built for 5th edition because the Shadow of the Demon Lord version of Imperial Matchmaker will be built like regular Shadow of the Demon Lord adventures. Because the scale for Shadow of the Demon Lord is entirely different. It's only levels 1 to 10, and there are many other different considerations involved with translating it.
Yeah, okay. The cover for Imperial Matchmaker Guests, as I'm looking at it, makes me think that this is not the kind of wedding party I wanted to go to.
That's the opening sequence in Imperial Matchmaker. And that's one of Sarah Shijo's illustrations, which she just, like, crushed.
Yeah.
So it opens with, like, you and your buddies are invited to, like, a tea ceremony in the Emperor's estate, which is, you know, huge. Like, that's huge. You're not nobles or anything, so, like, being invited to the Emperor's house is crazy. And then you get there, and they're all like, hey, you tried to poison this person, and that's unacceptable. Just cuts his freaking head off and then declares that anybody caught interfering with the Imperial Matchmaker proceedings will be executed. And then, of course, you know, the players get drawn into interfering proceedings.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And so you never know. You might get your head removed from your body at any time.
Perfect.
Well, you gotta instill the fear, you know?
Mm-hmm. You
gotta make it feel dangerous.
Well, that would definitely be a warning sign to me. I would definitely be on my best behavior after that. And now, 45 or more, that's when you get both adventures. You get the
yes. And I don't send print books. I did that once. I took orders basically in advance for hard copies for HyperCore 2099, and then I decided to add some pages, and they upped the printing cost on me. So I ate like almost $1,000 that I did not plan for. So. Okay. What I do is I give out vouchers. So you get a voucher, and then you just pay for the paper, ink, the glue, and the shipping. So I think it's like $18 plus $5 shipping. So
Oh, okay.
Excellent. And then it doesn't like constrain me on page counts and things like that. It lets the book be as good as it can possibly be.
Oh, okay. Excellent. And then let's see, $70 level is the I want all of it.
Yep. Okay. And you'll be inundated with Mr. Vakuma for at least 2.5 years.
Perfect. Excellent.
And you'll never need to play another RPG again.
That's a pretty good deal. that's a pretty good deal.
And I got a bunch of people ready to do stretch goal stuff, which is going to be, I'm going to compile them into like a book of additional side quests and monsters and magic items and stuff that you could use with either one of the books.
Excellent. Yeah, I was going to ask about stretch goals. That's all about getting more assets together.
Yes. Okay. There's a couple of really good ideas in there. The one that I like the best is actually the most rote. Somebody was basically just sent me a pitch that was a very short summary of the Seven Samurai. And I was like, okay, man, well, yeah, I'm going to take this. But like, how much experience do you have? Do you realize this is going to take more than 3,000 words? And like, it's going to take me more than one map to make this work. And he's like, yeah, I'm stoked about that one because I love Japanese cinema and the Seven Samurai is such an amazing story. And like, everybody's going to be like, oh, the Seven Samurai. Yeah, we're the Seven Samurai now. Yeah, definitely.
Now, does that have like kind of a Kurosawa vibe to it?
Kurosawa vibe? Yes.
Okay.
That was kind of one of the reasons I asked the guy. I was like, you realize how much research you're going to have to do. You're going to have to watch this movie at least 3 times. It's a 4-hour movie. Like, I hope you're ready to spend 2 days watching this movie. Yeah, I'm ready for that.
I haven't seen Seven Samurai. It's 4 hours long. Wow.
It's worth it.
I'm sure it is.
And it's all subtitled, right?
Yeah, it's all subtitled. I wouldn't watch a dub of it, honestly.
Yeah.
Most of the time I'm okay with dubs, but that's don't watch a dub of the Seven Samurai. Part of the reason it's 4 hours is because the pacing is not what you're going to be used to, but it's worth watching.
I've seen Magnificent Seven.
Magnificent Seven is based on it, yeah.
Yeah, it's basically the westernized version of it. So, when does that actually launch?
This should be launching in the beginning of September. Okay. Like I said, I'm waiting on that print proof, and the print proof shipped from New Jersey to Ohio, which is unbelievably frustrating for me. Because I'm right in the middle of New Jersey and Ohio, shipped this morning, so it should be here any day. We might launch before September, but with the stuff going on right now on Kickstarter, I think I'll probably just wait for September.
Okay, yeah. So when people hear this, it's going to be right around the corner.
Mm-hmm. I'll give you guys a link so you can give people one of the free PDFs, and inside the PDF there will be links that you can click to check out a preview of the Kickstarter page and then save it and pledge when it goes live.
Beautiful. Excellent.
Perfect.
There's so much goodness for you to enjoy.
All the nice things.
Make sure to check out the site, and we'll have a link for that, too. Man, it feels like I've gotten a crash course in this episode on so many things.
Hell.
Yes, I've gotten a crash course on Buddhist hells. I've learned all that. That's very good.
Vagaries of Japanese artistry and printing processes following the Meiji Restoration.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. My
all of the wonderful things you were hoping for in this episode.
Tanuki, the truth of Tanuki, the terrifying truth.
Yeah, you know what?
What Nintendo doesn't want you to know.
I'll let our listeners just research that in more detail on their own time. I don't need to tell you anything more about Tanuki. Is there anything else that we're forgetting to talk about, Mike?
If you're tired of steampunk, don't let that dissuade you from Mr. Vakuma, because I have kept you in mind this whole time.
Beautiful. I mean, I do like steampunk, but I don't need it all the time.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
So there you go, folks. If you like steampunk, but you don't always need steampunk, you have an option now.
And if you just want to torture your players that really like steampunk and punish them for it, like, this is the perfect place.
This is a perfect resource for that, too. And
you like steampunk? That's great. You're about to get all the steampunk.
And also, there's a giant flaming rooster. And so,
and as you're firing at it, suddenly your gun sprouts eyes and bites your hand.
Oh my god.
I forgot to talk about the items. Oh my god. Yes, keep going.
Now I need to know about items. What about the items? I just heard about something that could eat my hand. So
every adventure, like I said, I really like to give the players enough rope to hang themselves. So pretty much every adventure has at least one intelligent magic item that the players are going to want to keep, even though it's really bad for them.
Okay.
The one is like you get a bunch. I think you can just force disadvantage on 2 attacks coming at you per round, but you... constantly gain Haitoku. Oh, and Haitoku and Dignity. So the Mists of Akuma operate on two attributes that are added to the game. One of them is Dignity. It's how good people think of you, right? So sort of like honor, but based on perception.
Okay.
And then Haitoku, which is like the literal translation is fall from virtue. So think of it as the dark side. And as you go higher up in Haitoku, you get bonuses. Like you move faster, you can ignore damage at a certain point. But when you reach 23, you're transformed into a dead one, which are the zombie things. So okay. one of the items, just you gain Haitoku every single day. So if you don't get rid of it, you're going to change into a monster. And you have to try to build a cult while you have it.
Okay.
The other ones are like intelligent katanas. My favorite, I think, is the Umbrella Tsukumogami, because it follows you around and it aggrandizes whoever's like wielding it, even though secretly it hates them and is trying to get them killed. If you're a GM that likes to fuck with your players, like, yeah.
Well, you found your game. This is a dangerous, dangerous world. You don't even have to work that hard at destroying your players and everything that they believe. Congratulations.
Congratulations, your players are dead to you.
But you know what? Some people like that.
Dead players? I love dead players.
Well, the dead Barts. The pile of dead Barts.
Well, my problem is that whenever I run a game, I don't like to... I hate when people railroad me, so I just leave it super open-ended. It's like Grand Theft Auto. You can just do whatever the hell you want. So
right.
That's how I keep end up making these campaign settings. I'm like, oh, it'd be cool for an Eastern Fantasy game. And like now here I am with like 1,000 pages of Eastern Fantasy game stuff.
Right. Well, no, yeah, what you have now is you have like a world that's like open world so you don't get railroaded. But like every direction I go in, horrible
that's
things
right.
befall me.
That's right. And then I can just throw my hands up there. It's the world. It's not me.
No, I didn't do anything.
Exactly. I'm just following the text. It's right there. I didn't.
Hey, what do you want? Right? We tried. Alex, have you learned anything on the show today?
So much. A lot of which I'm going to need to have a lot of brain bleach for.
Yeah. There are some things that you will never forget. Your eyes cannot unsee. I want to thank Mike Myler for being on the show. Mike, thank you for coming on.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was fun.
If anybody is out there and wants to learn more about Mists of Akuma or Trade Wars, where could they go on the internet?
Go to MikeMyler.com, and there's a button at the top that's for campaign settings, and you'll find all my campaign settings, and all of which have like 4 or 5 free PDFs. And what more, I challenge anyone who plays D&D 5th Edition or Pathfinder to go to my website and not find something you like.
Challenge accepted.
Afro Samurai, I got Venger, I got Professor Moriarty, I got 20 posts about playing Warhammer 40k and D&D 5e, I got a Star Wars hack, I got the streets. I have a fucked up modern Sesame Street hack for D&D 5e. I swear to God,
beautiful.
You will find something you like on my website.
Oh, very nice. See, the second you said Warhammer in D&D, I figured Alex's head would explode for real this time.
You didn't know about the hack yet? Oh my God, I found out that there are two separate independent gaming groups in the Seattle Microsoft offices playing my hack. They apparently found out about it while talking at the water cooler. Yeah, I was like, no fucking way, what? You people make more money than I will see in my life. What is going on?
That's awesome. So Alex, I might ask if anyone was interested in finding out more about Delve, where could they go?
You can find more information about Delve over at DelveCast.com.
And when you go over to DelveCast.com, you can find all of our episodes and all the other things that we do, because, boy, it feels like we do a whole lot. When you happen to be over there, maybe check out our little Patreon button, which is in the corner. And you can go there and find all of the things that we offer to our patrons. You might find out a whole lot about Tanuki if you are a patron for this. And of course, I want to thank our shiny level patrons, Bonnie Ainsworth and Dom Perry. Thank you very much for joining. And boy, I hope that the extra conversation in this episode made it worthwhile for you. In addition, you can find us on Twitter. I am at Citanium.
I'm at EXP Limited, and the show is at Delve Podcast.
Mike, can they find you on social media?
Yes, I'm at Mike Myler too. And now that I think about it, starting tomorrow on the 17th of August, the at Midgardia RPG people are doing actual plays of Mists of Akuma game.
Oh, beautiful. Okay. How long is that running for?
Oh, golly, I don't know how fast they play. It could go for quite a while.
Okay, so chances are when people hear this...
The first game should be up by then.
Yeah, yeah, you'll be able to listen to it. And as always, make sure that if you happen to be on any kind of podcast app, the iTunes or the Google Play, you please rate and review and subscribe. I like getting stars in any single form that you can give them to me. And so, if you get trapped in the mists of Akuma, and you end up with a giant flaming rooster bearing down on you, I think the best thing you can do is stop, drop, roll, and then hope that you don't get your eyes pecked out. That's the best advice I have.
Yeah, I guess that's good advice.
I would hug that flaming rooster and just embrace my weird, awkward end.
You know what? It does make for a great story.
This is appropriate!
At least your obituary is going to be fascinating to read.
Yeah, nobody wants to get that.
And at least you're going out doing what you love.
Man comes to foul end. The puns with this rule.
And there'll be groans forever.
Spicy chicken wing. You haven't seen a spicy chicken wing until you see the one that killed somebody.
That's a good one. Spicy chicken wings kill man. Spicy foul chicken. Flaming death. Yeah.
Well, that's as much as we can talk about roosters today. And again, just want to thank Mike for coming on and explaining everything about Mists of Akuma, trade war, about multiple levels of hell of creatures I hope never to encounter in real life. So thanks, Mike, for fueling my nightmares for years to come.
You're most welcome.
Yes. And for everyone here at Delve, well, basically me and Alex, thank you for listening. We'll see you on the next episode. Goodbye.
Bye. I have no idea. I think we went over quite a lot, and my brain is just fried now.
Your brain is fried because there was so much Tanuki you didn't expect.
There was way more Tanuki than I ever wanted to Tanuki.
That is absolutely fine.
So the episode title is going to be Tanuki Nuki Panic?
No.
That's pretty good.
No.